This Dharma talk was recorded live at the Austin Zen Center in Austin, Texas. If you enjoy these talks and wish to support the temple and its offerings, please visit austinzencenter.org. Thank you for listening.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's wonderful to be here in Austin. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Tova Green. I practice at San Francisco Zen Center in the city of San Francisco. And my work practice there is to coordinate the over 75 Zen centers and smaller groups in the Suzuki Roshi lineage. This is my third visit to Austin, and I want to thank you, Choro, for inviting me to spend a week here. It's been wonderful to have time to practice with everyone and to talk to some people one-on-one and enjoy some informal time with Sangha members. I also want to thank my teacher, Ajahn Linda Cutts, who lives at Green Gulch Farm. And there's someone else I want to thank today and just bring his presence to mind, with Alan Sanaki, who was one of my mentors. He actually was a person who inspired me to want to practice Zen in the early 90s when I met him through the Buddhist Peace Fellowship in Berkeley, California. And he's become a mentor and a friend. He's been in the hospital for quite a while now, trying to recover, recovering hopefully from a heart attack that he had while he was in the hospital. Many family members, friends in Berkeley Zen, and he's the abbot of Berkeley Zen Center, spending time with him, supporting him and his family. And we all hope that he will fully recover. So the title of my talk this morning is Finding Spaciousness in Challenging Times. And I think we can perhaps all relate to the challenging times part, the title. And for many people, maybe having personally challenging times, but I think in addition, there's so much happening in our country and our world that is challenging and difficult. So how can spaciousness arise and how can it help us in these times personally and in all the ways we interact with our communities and country and wider world? So this word spaciousness came up for me when I was thinking of, I learned from a friend that it can be helpful at the beginning of the year to just pick a word that might inform one's actions and choices during the year. And the word that came up for me is spaciousness. And I think that is helping me to, you know, notice sometimes my what I call small mind when I'm comparing or judging, and also thinking about being curious, meeting things with as much openness as possible, and also seeing how I can create more spaciousness in my life every day. And you know, other words for spaciousness would be openness, mind, awakening. And I think it's related to Suzuki Roshi's phrase, beginner's mind, and that sense of possibility that having a beginner's mind can bring. One quote, I have, I'm not such a great memory of exact quotations, but the one that stays with me of Suzuki Roshi's is, in the expert's mind, There are, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. So just the valuing that mind that can enable us, even if we are doing something that we've done before, to bring a freshness to it. So this morning, I'd like to share some practices and teachings that cultivate spaciousness. In meditation, many of us here are doing a one-day sitting, and as well as in our daily lives, and to look at how spaciousness can help us connect with things that are difficult in ourselves, our world, our relationships. So, and I would say, oddly, spaciousness can be found in something that's very small, or in a moment, a gesture, a word, or in silence. It doesn't have to be something large. Thinking about what can help us practice with spaciousness in meditation, there are a few elements that are helpful. There's some of the basics of meditation instruction, which is one of them is using the breath and focusing on the breath and really paying attention to our breath as something that can help us stay in the present moment. And I'll say more about that in a minute. But then paying attention to our posture. Sometimes I think about having a string that goes from the top of my head all the way up to the sky, and that helps me align my spine, relaxing the shoulders. And then silence and stillness, which we're maintaining, those of us who are sitting today, having this opportunity to be silent for an extended period of time, can be really helpful in tuning in to what is internal, you know, our thought processes, our emotions, and to our bodies, most of all. In Suzuki Roshi's talks, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, there are a number of short chapters that offer instruction for Zazen meditation. And the one about breathing is one that I keep coming back to. And this is one thing that he said. When we inhale, the air comes into the inner world. When we exhale, the air goes out to the outer world. The inner world is limitless, and the outer world is also limitless. What's that? It's something to think about. The inner world is limitless, and the outer world is also limitless. Then he goes on to say, we say inner world or outer world, but actually, there is just one whole world. In this limitless world, our throat is like a swinging door. The air comes in and goes out like someone passing through a swinging door. If you think I breathe, the I is extra. There is no you to say I. So that can be puzzling. No you to say I. We say I frequently all the time. It's, you know, we think of ourselves as separate beings much of the time. But I think thinking of this, there's no separation between the inner world and outer world is a way of approaching spaciousness and the sense that we're not limited. We are in our bodies, and each of us is a unique being, and yet we are also interconnected with everyone and everything. And And specifically, where she goes on to say, this way of understanding breathing is a way of, instead of only being aware of our small self, to also be aware of our universal nature, our Buddha nature, our awakened nature that is limitless. So there's another teaching that I really love that helps understand this concept of spaciousness. And it's found in some writing by Ehe Dogen, who was, but he lived from 1200 to 1253, so quite a while ago. He did a lot of writing. He was, as a young monk, he traveled to China. He was Japanese and traveled to China, which in that time was a very arduous trip, and stayed for 3 years and stayed in many Chinese monasteries and learned a great deal about monastic practice and brought some of those forms back with him to China. And they have traveled all the way here to Austin Zen Center, San Francisco Zen Center, through Suzuki Roshi. And they have to do with, some of them have to do with how we take care of a temple. And part of that is through having different roles in the temple. So Dogen wrote about the role of the director, the role of the head of the meditation hall, the Eno, and very importantly, the role of the head cook. Because monasteries, people were living there and they needed to be fed. So, and the head cook in a monastery is called the Tenzo. And yeah, feel free to make yourselves comfortable. Already some of us have been sitting for quite a while with him. So he wrote something called the Tenzo. Tenzo is the word for head cook. Tenzo Byokun, instructions for the cook. And near the end of that, he talks about three kinds of mind. He delineated what he called joyful mind, magnanimous mind, and parental mind. So I'm going to talk a little bit about all of those. And mind, the Japanese word or Chinese word, I think is probably similar, is qing, and it translates to heart mind. So it's not just mental, it's our entire being is mind. And these three minds express the internal world of an awakening being, a bodhisattva, and they are all connected with each other. So Dogen says, when working in any portion, in any position, working in any position of responsibility, strive to maintain a spirit of joy and magnanimity, along with the caring attitude of a parent. So I asked the person who's the Tenzo for today's one day sitting, and what she enjoys about being the Tenzo. She is the one who would plan the menu and shop for the ingredients, and she had help, but she's responsible for the delicious breakfast we had. And she said, it's supporting the Sangha to just sit, to nourish him. And that is a very generous expression, it seems to me, and it's an example of Daishin, which is great, or magnanimous mind. And that kind of mind is grounded in meditation, in Zazen, which is great and boundless. And now quoting some words of Alan Samaki, who wrote a piece about these three lines that I found as I was preparing this talk. So he says, great line is grounded in Zazen, which itself is great and boundless. It is like a mountain, stable and impartial. Also exemplifying the ocean, it is tolerant and views everything from the broadest perspective, being without prejudice and refusing to take sides. And Suzuki Roshi called this big mind as well. And this big mind, open mind, can lead to the next one, to joyful mind. The expression of great mind is gratitude, which gives birth to joyful mind. And Dogen says, a joyful spirit is one of gratefulness and buoyancy. And he says about the Tenzo, how fortunate we are to have been born in, as human beings, given the opportunity to prepare meals for the Sangha. So I think that's what Anne was expressing, talking about what she appreciates about being the Tenzo. It's and it's a way of knowing that what you do is benefiting other beings and not only oneself. And it's an expression, joyful mind is an expression of gratitude for the gift of life, for the opportunity to be of use to others. Then joy arises and flows for you. And I would say for myself, this is something I experience more and more as I get older, aware that I'm really fortunate to be healthy, to be able to travel, to be here, to be living in a very caring community surrounded by people who I care about as well. And there's a poem by a poet, Jane Kenyon, and a line that I really appreciate is, it could be otherwise. You know, I think for any of us, things can change very quickly. And to be able to be here today together is something we can be grateful for. And then the third line, Roshin, so first Daishin is great mind, Kishin is joyful mind. And Roshin is Japanese for the mind of a parent. And Alan says, this mind naturally arises from joyful mind. Literally, Roshin means old mind. So sometimes thought of as grandparently mind. And sometimes, you know, and I know many people who are grandparents, I'm not a parent or a grandparent myself, but they take such joy in being with their grandchildren. And they don't have all the worries of a parent. So it may be easier than parental mind. Which, grandparent, what do you think of it as grandparent mind or parent mind? You know, it's a very nurturing mind. And certainly the head focus is nurturing. It's a nurturing role. But all of us can experience that kind of mind. And I also think of my own, my maternal grandmother, who when my parents were both working, she often took care of me and my sisters. And she would call me Shana Medela, which in Yiddish, it's pretty little girl. I mean, yeah, Shana is pretty. And I could feel that boundless love from her. So I think, for those of us who have grandparents or had grandparents, we can be very blessed by those people who love us unconditionally and often take care of us. And I also think of, we chant something called the loving kindness meditation. Even as a mother, at the risk of her own life, watches over and takes care of her only child, So with a boundless mind, should we cherish all living things? So that is an example, I think, also of spaciousness. Not only caring about the ones close by who we love, but we care about all beings everywhere. So I invite you just to take a moment to reflect on what brings you joy, what awakens gratitude for you, and what brings you to a sense of opening. It's part of this sense of spaciousness. So I also want to talk a little about how we may experience spaciousness in everyday life. And they're simple things, sometimes simply pausing. You know, if you find yourself rushing, if I find myself rushing, get somewhere, I take a moment to stop and breathe. And even if I might be near a place, just I found myself in that situation this morning. I actually got here early. I was going to open the Zendo, but I realized I had forgotten my sabu, my bowing block. And I decided to really rush back across the street to get it and rush back here and kicked off my shoes. And this is not really experiencing spaciousness. I didn't want to keep everyone waiting, but it probably would have been better if I could just slow down. So we could all get into that sense of, you know, I do think it's helpful to be on time. And someone once said that a way of practicing spaciousness is to get to a place early, so you actually have time to fully arrive and be there and sometimes talk to people informally before a meeting begins, or take a moment to breathe deeply for a few breaths. So those are some ways of creating spaciousness in our daily lives. And also doing something, anything really with a lot of attention. Could be washing dishes or cutting vegetables or making a cup of coffee, enjoying the feeling of warm water or the weight of the night or the aroma of the coffee beans, repairing or mending something that's broken can be another way of just being fully present with something that we might do frequently. And allowing for surprises, and noticing details of things. So I found a poem that I thought shed some light on this, how we can experience spaciousness from everyday things. It's from a book by a poet named Ross Gay, who lives in Illinois, and who's a community gardener as well as poet. It's called Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude. I was right. And he wrote an ode. An ode is a poem of praise. And typically, historically, odes have been about emperors or famous people. But this ode is an ode to buttoning and unbuttoning my shirt. And it's quite long, so I'm only going to read a little bit of it. It says, "No one knew, or at least I didn't know, they knew, what the thin discs threaded here on my shirt might give me in terms of joy. This is not something to be taken lightly, the gift of buttoning one shirt so slowly, top to bottom, or bottom to top." And he goes on to talk more about things he notices as he's buttoning his shirt. That might be something we take for granted, in our shirts, but we at one time had to learn how to do that. And there are people who, for various reasons, are unable to button their shirts. So even something like that small that we do frequently can be a source of gratitude and joy. and spaciousness. I think they're all connected. So, I would like to bring into the room the voice of one of our former abbots at San Francisco Zen Center, Steve Stuckey. There's a recent book that was compiled by one of his students, Renshin Bunce. And Ren, I'm going to call her Ren. Ren and I received priest ordination at the same time. And her initial teacher was Blanche Hartman, who founded the Zen Center, whose name we chant in the morning. And Steve Stuckey was her other preceptor, and my teacher, Linda Luth, was the third preceptor, the people who give us the precepts and our robes and bowls that we receive when we're ordained as priests. And for a long time, Steve was the central abbot of San Francisco Zen Center. And this book is a compilation of some of Ren's memories of Steve, some other students and colleagues of his, their memories, and then some words that he wrote before he died. He learned about 3 months before he died that he had pancreatic cancer and it was stage four. So he knew he didn't have very much time left. And he gave one final Dharma talk soon after he got that diagnosis at Green Gulch Farm, and I was very fortunate to be there. And that talk is in this book, and there's a picture of him. There is one on the Paisando altar too that you can see. I think you can all see this photo. It's the cover of the book. And he was talking about a meditation practice, and so I wanted to share. There are two parts of this book that I want to share. This one might be helpful as for those of us who are sitting today. I just want to suggest a practice of continually moving between awareness of one's own internal body, taking care of one's own internal body, which I think is something that a lot of our practice is. Say waking us up to, pointing to taking care, mindfulness, sitting still, deeply investigating what's going on internally. It actually helps your whole life if you take care of the signals coming from your own body and then the body around you. Actually attend to those relationships as your own body, understanding that there are boundaries within that, areas of responsibility within that, but to ultimately include everything and to be able to cultivate this practice of moving one's perspective from here, this body, to any other part, and then back to here. In the course of that, everything becomes more and more known and familiar. And it becomes clearer, I think, moment to moment, to know what to do, how to respond, what to take care of, and how to take care of it. So it's that sense of starting with our own awareness of our body, and we wouldn't be able to be here if it weren't for our bodies. And sometimes people think that Zen is really about the mind, and it's really also about the body and taking good care of our bodies if we want to be able to continue to meditate throughout our lives. So I thought that might be helpful just to think about during the day. I would say, you know, we try to be still, but if you're feeling particularly, if you're feeling put people fall asleep or pain that seems to only be getting worse, I think it's okay to sit up in rest posture. You can bring your knees up and spend a few moments relaxing those parts of your body that may be stressed. And then you can go back to your zazen position. And I would say if you're having ongoing pain, then maybe you might want to see about talking in Choro or with the Eno and seeing what can be done to help so that you can be at peace with your body during the day. So another thing I wanted to say about Steve Stuckey is that in his last talk, he told us about his practice of starting every day by waking up with gratitude. And he would get out of bed, put his palms together, and just say the word gratitude, and then wait to see what came to mind. Whatever it was, he would find some way feeling grateful for it. And I think towards the end, he said, when he was in a lot of pain, that he would look for something positive that he was feeling grateful for, because the pain was got to be at times very difficult to bear. And he talked about another teaching of Dogen's in a classical called Only a Buddha and a Buddha, where there's one of where Dogen quotes an ancestor who says the entire earth is the true human body. So our bodies are not separate from the rain outside, the beautiful oak tree in your front yard, the things we eat that might be easier to see, but everything that grows and all the people on the planet. And so each human body is independent and simultaneously the whole earth. And I think that can help us to cultivate a concern about the climate, a concern about people who are suffering due to homelessness, war, poverty, hunger. We may not be able to address all of those concerns, but we can be aware of what's happening in our city, country, and world. And one of the things Steve expressed gratitude for in that last talk of his was for being able to go to South Dakota while he was still able to walk. And he joined a priest named Shoto Cedar Spring in what was called the Compassionate Earth Walk. This was a number of years ago, not that long ago, I remember it. It was following the approximate path of the Keystone XL pipeline, which was bringing tar sands, extracted crude oil from Canada through the United States down to the Gulf of Mexico. And this is what Steve said. The thought is to bring awareness to the earth and the impact of this part of our body. How do we take care of this part of our body? It's something so big that we have to look at it as a whole society. We have to look at it, and we haven't. We don't have the organizational skill to regulate our own greed as a civilization and the greediness of our culture. So it's, I think, hard for most people to imagine having oil in the ground and leaving it there. What an idea. What a practice, a restraint to actually accept that it's healthier for the whole body to look at how we contribute to the imbalance of carbon in the earth and carbon in the atmosphere. So in taking care of this body, I also don't want to neglect the whole. And he said, I felt very fortunate to be able to walk, to be able to attend to the impact of our many actions. Well, I'm aware that I'm in Texas. A lot of people have made their livings through the oil industry, and probably many of them have also benefited other beings. But if we think about what we can do to save our planet and reduce the climate crisis, what small individual actions can we take? And I think just that awareness that he brought to the importance of doing what he could. And at the time he took that walk, he didn't know he had pancreatic cancer. But he found out soon afterwards. So we never know how much time we have. And so I feel for myself, I want to use it as best I can and do things that I feel are of benefit to other beings, not only for my own well-being and pleasure. So I'd like to end with a poem, which I think also points to spaciousness. It's a poem by a Bay Area poet, Jane Hirschfield. Short poem, it's called Tree. It's about a redwood tree, but this tree, how old is the tree outside? It's such an amazing tree. But this is, she says, Tree. It is foolish to let a young redwood grow next to a house. Even in this one lifetime, you will have to choose. That great calm being, this clutter of soup pots and books. Already the first branch tips brush at the window. Softly, calmly, immensity taps at your life. So you might say the clutter of soup pots and books. We need the soup pots. I don't know that we have to choose, but can we also be aware of leaving space for these trees and leaving space in our minds for a sense of spaciousness and for cultivating joyful mind, big mind, magnanimous mind, and parental mind. So thank you for your attention. And I think we have some time for your thoughts. So if you'd like to share something or ask a question, make a comment, raise your hand, or can people online do that as well?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hi. Could you start with your name?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm Laura, and thank you for coming. Beautiful talk. I saw in your bio that you had worked in hospice, or you're working in hospice, and I'm a family member right now in hospice. And I was wondering if you could talk to wisdom you have about supporting someone at the, the end of their life, and also supporting yourself as it's just been challenging.
Thank you. So Laura, just for those you might not have heard what she asked, she noticed in my bio that I've worked as a hospice social worker, and she wondered if I could offer some words about how to support someone at the end of life, as well as someone who's caring for someone at the end of life. I think they're both, caring. If you're caring for someone near the end of life, it's so important to remember to take to care for yourself. I was impressed, you know, when I visited Alan Sanaki in the hospital. Initially, he was on life supports, and his wife and son and daughter were all there. And they, as were Sangha members, they made sure to take lunch breaks, to take naps. They were aware that they were there for, they didn't know how long they would be doing that caregiving. And I think caregiving includes taking care of the one who's the caregiver, because otherwise you can burn out and then it's really difficult. And there's a wonderful book by Frank Ostasevsky, who was one of the early directors of the Zen Hospice Project in San Francisco, called The Five Invitations. And a couple of them, one of them is don't wait. So if you're with someone who's dying, make sure you tell them you love them. If there's any unfinished business, try to clear it up if possible. You know, another is bring your whole self to the bedside. So if you're feeling sad, it's okay to express that, you know, to really be yourself when you're sitting with someone who's seriously ill or dying. Those are a couple, but I think that's a great resource.
Could you say the name of that?
Yes, it's called The Five Invitations. Yes.
I'm Jacob. I really resonated with the idea of like the earth being the full human body. And I think about how, you know, a lot of the communities or the peoples who are protecting the planet are either indigenous or have some connection to the earth. And, you know, you can argue that Buddhism is in the same way, very connected to the earth. So what would be like the call to action as a practitioner with that in mind? Like, how do we show up with the earth being the human body? While, like, you know, the U.S. government, like the U.S. military is one of the biggest polluters in the world. Like, how do we be with that, and not actively try to, like, go against the state, for instance? You know, like, I have friends who are also part of the pipeline, but they're anarchists, and I think they're embodying their practice way more than a lot of people are. So, like, how do you be with that? You know, you can't see yourself actually being at a pipeline or doing that type of action. Like, how can you actually be living in a body practice that is, you know, reflective of the care of the planet?
I think there's always something we can do. May not be something as big as going to a protest for the pipeline. And actually, some of the people who stayed with the protest were also Native American, many of them women. And women's actions around the pipeline. I think it is possible to, understand. Well, I heard you say that some of the people who were involved were anarchists. I think it's possible to try to make change within a country by voting our country. You know, I think it's when we may feel there's not the perfect choice, to encourage other people to vote, to take care of where we live in whatever way we can. Some people who are concerned about the planet will plant trees. And there are small actions, there are larger actions, but I think what helps is doing something and also joining with others who care. There are many organizations now that are addressing the climate crisis. I'm sure there's some here in Austin. So that can really help this sense of overwhelm. You know, if there's some small thing that you can do that will make a difference, and not to do it alone. That's for that question.
Thank you for your talk. And when you said take a moment to think of spaciousness, what comes to mind, and refuge is what came to mind. And I think, you know, the mindfulness teachings about, you know, when you wash the dishes, just wash the dishes, just cut the carrots. When I'm in an agitated state or something's really pressing on me, worry, when I do, just, you know, feel dishwater, suddenly everything's okay. It's like to join that, to join your activity, join the one body, feels like refuge to me.
Thank you. But everyone here? Yes. Okay. Refuge. Yeah. You can take refuge, as you said, in each moment, just by being fully present in.
Hi, I'm Bala.
Do you mind standing so I can see?
Yes.
The screen in between.
Thank you for your talk. I am Bala. Spaciousness reminded me of my physical space and all that crowds that, and all those objects that steal my time, my energy, because I worry about them, because I, you know, engage in possessiveness rather than letting go, and how spaciousness can be just a simple surrounding of our life so that we can focus on the things that matter, like Jacob was suggesting, rather than being busy all the time in mundane things. Thank you.
Thank you. There are two sides to that, I think. You know, Suzuki Roshi talked about respect for things. So when we do have things, they do need to be taken care of. And how we hold something generally recommends two hands if it's something precious, you know, carrying our Oriyuki bowls with two hands. Or, so the things that we have do need care. And I think I'm someone who also has more things than I really am helpful. I recently had to move. I was living in one room at San Francisco Zen Center for over 10 years. So I didn't, when sometimes when you move, you have to cull. And so I went through a process of culling books and papers, and then I moved to an apartment that's larger, but I still see I have too many books and papers. Mm-hmm. And I think that it can, you know, there's, I'm not going to remember the exact title of the name, but a book that talks about how decluttering your home can help declutter your mind. And that can be really helpful to go through your possessions periodically and, you know, see with each thing. And she, and I'll just give an example of, say, shirts. You would put all your shirts in a pile on the floor and hold them up one by one. Does this shirt bring me joy? And if not, you put it on a pile and you find a way to either give it away or bring it to Goodwill or whatever, or if it's really worn and you don't need it, and you thank it first before you. And I have done that with clothing. It's easier with clothing for me than with books. But anyway, I think to find some balance, you know, between too many things to take care of and just the right amount and what fits in your space and how creating spaciousness around us can help create more mental spaciousness as well. Thanks for that. and how it fits in your face.
Yeah.
I love that idea about picking a word to put what's right here. I don't know if I can think of something better than spaciousness.
Well, it doesn't have to be better.
Yes.
It'll be your word. And if it's spacious, that's fine. There's enough spaciousness to go around. Actually, I found my friend Linda Gallion, who was here, she's also a Zen teacher, gave a talk at Houston Zen Center on spaciousness. So I found it while I was here on the Houston Zen Center website, and I listened to it. It was very different than my talk. There's so much that could be said about spaciousness.
It's pretty big. Yeah.
A lot of people use spaciousness.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, I think that spaciousness is modeled by all the space around us, this physical space we live in. I just think that's why people like to go to the beach. You know, they really, there's one more spaciousness there. Or just look up.
Yeah, looking at the sky is amazing. Yeah. The spaciousness of this room, the high ceilings, even with all of us in here today, it feels spacious. So maybe that's a good place to stop. And thank you all for your attention. And for those of you who are leaving, I hope you find many ways of enjoying spaciousness today, as we have tried to do here in the center.